Hey, kia ora whānau, how are you? You doing all right? Yeah, awesome. Hey, as the team gets down this morning, and thanks this morning, really appreciated it, team. You did a really awesome job at leading us into the presence of Jesus and the heart of Christmas, the spirit of Christmas. Hey, family, I have a bit of a sensitive question that I want to begin with this morning. I know it's a great way to start a talk, but the question here this morning is, who enjoys Christmas shopping? Who enjoys Christmas shopping? Now, put your hands up if you enjoy Christmas shopping. Don't be ashamed if that's you. Yeah, put your hand up, okay? I'm not just doing it because I'm asking you to do it. I'm putting my hand up. I'm acknowledging that myself. Yeah, okay, sweet. So, like, five of us. No, there's more than five of us. Yeah. Personally, I kind of expected that because with Christmas shopping comes a lot of things, eh? Like long lines, crazy drivers at the base, all sorts of like nutters, but it's okay. Personally, I really enjoy it. What I love about it is I love that hunt for the perfect gift. Now, people try to tell me that the perfect gift doesn't exist, but I'll have you know that I will find it. I haven't yet found it, but I will find it. That's something that both represents the person that I'm giving it to really, really well. I want to represent them well in the gift, but also at the same time, tell them how much I love them and I just want to gift them something. And so I have my wife and many a friend who have experienced the great Christmas shop with me. And sadly, I would say they do not share the same sentiment around Christmas shopping. I think that I've driven them crazy with my going from shop to shop and then back to that shop that you were just in. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. See, the Christmas shoppers are all like, yeah, Dave, this makes perfect sense. Of course you go back to that shop. Yeah, thank you, Becky. Yeah, so good. And the pursuit of that special gift. And I think that's an important thing. Yeah, we acknowledge the perfect gift might not be out there, but the special gift, that is there. Just the other day, I was shopping with Taylor, brother. You want to put your hand up? Yeah, cool, sweet. So he's in the house this morning. He's okay with me saying this. And by the end of it, having not finished my Christmas shopping, but feeling very content with the few gifts that I'd got, I was feeling pretty good, you know? I was walking away from my Christmas shop being like, yes, done. Taylor, on the other hand, I think that he was potentially heavily demoralized and on the cusp of a breakdown. And I had to apologize in the form of shouting him lunch. So sorry, bro, I do love you and thanks for bearing with my craziness. It's good. Now, I understand that Christmas present shopping isn't for everyone. I understand that. But my question this morning is, what is that thing for you? What is that thing for you? And I'll unpack what I mean by that. What is that thing that you are going after this Christmas season? What is that thing that even in the last month you have spent a significant amount of your time, energy, brain power, daydreaming, whatever it might be to go after? Because the thing is, we all have that something that we're going after, that something that we're pursuing. And I think that on the season of Christmas, which is fairly consumeristic, it becomes even more evident how as humans, we generally chase things. We go after things. And so this morning, as we finish our Christmas series, A Thrill of Hope, we're getting into one of my favorite parts of the Nativity, the story of the Magi, or wise men, as many call them today. This is all about a great pursuit, an intense looking for and going after. And this is why this part of the story is one of my favorites. And so this morning, what I'm wanting to do is you find the story in Matthew chapter 2. So if you've got your Bibles, open them to Matthew chapter 2, or pull out your devices and flick there. And we're going to be reading it together. But one of the things with the Christmas story is that we can become very familiar with it. And so as we read this story, because we're going to read from verse 1 to 12, only 12 verses, but very quickly we can switch off. And so what I'm inviting us to do this morning, because I believe that the Spirit of God works powerfully through His Word, through the Word, that we would in some way put ourselves in this passage this morning. And so this morning, if you need to close your eyes as it's read, I invite you to do that. If this morning you need to imagine yourself as one of the Magi, feel free to do that. If you just want to be a fly on the wall, that third party that had nothing to do but was present, put yourself in this story. Because the truth of this story is that it is a part of our story. It is a part of our story. Even though it happened 2,000 years ago, it means something to us today. And it is in the Word of God for a reason. And so this morning we need to lean in, pay attention, and ask the Spirit of God to speak to us and show us what is He saying this morning to us. And so Eve, I've invited Eve to come and read this this passage, Matthew chapter 2, verse 1 and 12. And so close your eyes, imagine yourself there. This is our story.
Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the reign of King Herod. About that time, some wise men from eastern lands arrived in Jerusalem, asking, "Where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw his star as it rose, and we have come to worship him." King Herod was deeply disturbed when he heard this, as was everyone in Jerusalem. He called a meeting of the leading priests and teachers of religious law and asked, "Where is the Messiah supposed to be born?" "In Bethlehem in Judea," they said, "for this is what the prophet wrote. And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not least among the ruling cities of Judah, for a ruler will come from you, who will be the shepherd for my people Israel." Then Herod called for a private meeting with the wise men, and he learned from them the time when the star first appeared. Then he told them, "Go to Bethlehem and search carefully for the child. And when you find him, come back and tell me so that I can go and worship him too." After this interview, the wise men went their way, and the star they had seen in the east guided them to Bethlehem. It went ahead of them and stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were filled with joy. They entered the house and saw the child with his mother, Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasure chest and gave him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. When it was time to leave, they returned to their own country by another route, for God had warned them in a dream not to return to Herod.
So good, Eve. Thank you. A round of applause for Eve. That was a great reading. Yeah. Yeah. So, whānau, the question that I want to begin with this morning is, who are these wise guys? Okay? Who are these wise guys? Say to somebody next to you, who are these wise guys? All right, good stuff. Now, there are a lot of different opinions ranging from traditional Christian folklore to historical and cultural studies. What is safe to say is that being from the east, they were most likely from somewhere around Babylon. As for what they did, wow, that's interesting. They were a sort of physician / magician / astrologer. Wizards would probably be the best way of describing them today. Now, they would have followed some form of Persian religion and practiced magic. Now, by magic, I'm not meaning bunny out of the hat or where did the handkerchief go kind of magic. What I'm talking about here is a kind of magic that connected them to the spiritual realm. Dark magic, even, you could say. So that's really, really interesting that in this story, we have these individuals coming and they are aware, they are connected, but not necessarily in the way that we would expect. Now, there's so many theories there, and I've loved doing all the reading and the study around this. And if any of you are that way inclined, come talk to me and I can suggest a few like cool articles and that kind of thing. But I know that not everybody is that way inclined, so we're not going to go there this morning. But what I do want to say is what we do know for certain about these individuals. Okay? And now, who of you, quick question, are imagining three people here? Yeah? Three people? Yeah. It's really hard to shake, hey? Because, I mean, we don't actually know how many showed up. It could have been two, it could have been three, it could have been 10. You know, like what we do know is that these were magi and that they were a part of a religious order from Babylon and they had figured something out and they were coming to find a king. Three wise men from Orient are is generally how we would sing it. But I'm just going to debunk that myth. Doesn't say it in the Bible. So I know that's bigger than the... I've potentially ruined your Christmas now. And so I'm sorry, but you guys are going to get over it. We'll get through this together. What I do know for certain, and what we do know for certain, is that these individuals, are seeking. They are seeking. They are looking for and pursuing a coming king. Like that's really clear in the text. We don't have to read between the lines to pick up on those particular details. And what I want to say this morning is that I don't think it's necessarily because it was just their profession, okay? Because it was what they did, because it was what they were paid to do, you could say. But I believe that they were doing this because they had a passion and that they realized that there was something different about this coming one. This is something that I'm pretty sure we can be certain of. They knew that there was something different about this coming one, something so different, they saw it in the stars. Something so different about this coming one, they saw it in the stars. And so what do we see happen when they get there? So we're going to do a bit of a walkthrough of this story of what Eve just read to us. What do we see happen when they get there? When they reach their destination, in verse 9 and 10, we read this. And they saw the star they had seen in the east guided them to Bethlehem. It went ahead of them and stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were filled with joy. Okay, so question here. Who loves getting out of a car or off a plane after a long trip? Who loves that feeling? It's such a good feeling of getting out and being able to stretch your legs, especially if you're like on the taller side and you've been a little bit like cramped in. And if you're like me and you fly like cattle class, that's a thing, eh? That's kind of what we call it. Yeah, that's what we're going with, okay. Relates to the nativity story, cattle class. You see what I did there? Now, when we read that they were filled with joy, okay, you could just think that they were excited to have finally reached their destination. There was no more, are we there yet? No more, move over, you're taking up my space, or move your camel into the slow lane because I need to be overtaking you right now. It was so much more than that, okay? It was so much more than that. We here, in English, have two words to describe what it was meaning for them, okay? And how they were feeling. And it's filled and joy. So we've got two words, yeah? You're tracking with me? They were filled with joy. So we're focusing on the words filled and joy. Now, in the Greek, they have four words. Classic Greeks, eh? Ancient Greeks, that is. I don't think they would have four words these days. So what I want to do this morning is I want to unpack those four words because I think that in the fact that they have more words to expand on what they were feeling it paints a picture. And then we dig into what do these words originally mean in the Greek, and it paints us even a greater picture. And so we're going to go there. Is that cool, Whānau? Yep, awesome. Let's do it. So the first word that we have, and excuse me, please, because I don't actually speak ancient Greek. So if you do, you know, you can come and chastise me afterwards. But the first word that we have that's going to come up on the screen, it's sphodra in that. So in the brackets, you can see like the Dave's hack job at trying to enunciate it correctly. So the word sphodra, okay? So the first two words are the filled, and then the second two words are the joy. And so let's look at what picture it paints. Sphodra means exceedingly, greatly, very much, done to the max, going all out, wide open, with total effort. So, we say filled. Right here, it looks like a party. Like they are, literally, it's like says going all out, that they were wide open to the possibilities of whatever this moment held for them. And so, that's an important word to pick up on. We say filled, they say party time. Everybody say party time. Party time. Wow. Oh, that worked way better than I thought it would. That was awesome. Anyway, next word, it's clearly getting close to Christmas, is megas. Megas. You guys say megas? Megas. All right, awesome. So this one, again, is filled, or the word that helps us understand that we've translated it to the filled, and is large, great, and in the widest sense. Okay, so this is the kind of party. It's a large, great, and in the widest sense. So they're going all out when they see that the star has finally found its final resting place above Bethlehem. Yeah? Is this starting to make sense? Yes? Awesome. Cool. So the next word that we have is ka'a, ka'a. And this word here means joy, gladness, or a source of joy. Okay, so now we're looking at the fill. We've moved from the two words that meant filled and to the two words that meant joy. And so the first one is ka'a, and that is joy, gladness, and a source of joy. So you're like, okay, yep, cool, joy, that makes sense. That I would use that word too to translate it. The next word is an expansion of the same word, and it's going to come up, and it's kairo, kairo. You guys say kairo? Kairo, awesome, good stuff. Now, this word is an interesting one. To rejoice, be glad, to delight in God's grace. Rejoice, literally, to experience God's grace and favor. To be conscious, glad for his grace. And so, Whānau, as we look at these four words, what kind of picture is it painting? I'm just going to, for like 2 minutes, let's have a quick question. Like, let's just talk amongst ourselves. What kind of picture are these four words painting? Is that cool? Does that make sense what I'm asking? Yep, awesome, sweet. Let's do that for 2 minutes. Okay, cool. Some good conversation happening? Yep. Anybody have anything in particular, you know, like a summation of what these kind of words describe to them? Can I explain it in Greek? Well, let me get my glasses out. No, I can't explain it in Greek. We'll do a quick summation. Marcus had a quick question, and I'll unpack that real quick soon, man. Do we have any, like, kind of like, these four words sound like this to me? Murray, you're getting pointed at, so I'm dropping you in it. Big, fat Greek wedding. I mean, party, yes, yeah. Yeah. A lot of smashing of plates, a lot of whoopas, you know, all of that kind of thing. Whoopa, everybody say whoopa. Whoopa. Yeah, so good. Man, this is getting crazy. We are clearly getting close to Christmas. Okay, cool. Anything else? Yep. Hi. Were you putting your hand up or are you just whoopaing? Yeah, okay, so they're still partying up the back. That's good. Cool. All right, so a whole lot of anticipation, yeah. Yeah, expectation. Yeah. So good. Yeah. It's really interesting now, like when we look at the English, we go filled and joy, and we're like, oh, they were just excited to finally be at their destination, you know, like, and they're stretching their legs and that. But there's so much more going on that we realize when we start to really unpack the story and realize that God is doing something good here. Now, really quickly, Marcus asked a question and he said, how were the wise men experiencing God's grace before Jesus died on the cross. Is that, would that be a correct way of saying what you'd said? Yeah. Okay, sweet. So, I would say they are experiencing God's grace by being led on a journey, firstly by God. Like, and they have come to a place where they know something big's going to happen, and that is God's grace. Now, whether they recognize that it's like Yahweh, you know, like God, the God of Israel, or not, they are functioning in God's grace. But at the same time, I would say this, because often as Christians, we associate grace to being only what we receive when we accept Jesus as our Savior. When grace actually is, the world is awash with grace. The world exists because God lets it. Like, the world didn't earn favor. And so we live in a world, as weary as it may be, awash with his grace. Because he is a good God. He is a gracious God. And the thing is that because he is grace, because he's gracious, he can't, it wasn't like he just started to be gracious. It's that he always has been. And so he created humanity in grace out of unearned favor. He loved us so much that he created us. Is that kind of making sense? And then we continue all through life to function. Now, the climax of like God's grace and his goodness to us comes in the form of Jesus. So that begins at Christmas and it ends at Easter in terms of the days that we're celebrating all that God has done for us. But we need to recognize that this world is awash with grace, that I exist because of God's grace, that I'm breathing right now and I'm seeing your beautiful faces right now because of God's grace. And then all of a sudden, when we as Christians start to acknowledge that and live in the grace of God, wow, that changes how I view things and it changes how I view others, that I start to see the image of God in them way more. So park it there. Is that kind of okay, man? Yeah? All right. Sweet. All right. Sweet. So, thanks, bro. Thanks, man. Now, did they fully understand who this king was? That's a really good question and something that I've been trying to think about over the last wee while. And I would say, I don't know. I don't know if they fully understood who this king was that they were seeking after. But what is made clear by this language is that they knew the divine nature of what they were stepping into. They knew the divine nature because, I mean, what star moves and stops? So there is something supernatural, something divine going on. And so they understood that they were stepping into a very divine moment, an encounter of some sort that would change them and this world potentially forever. They just didn't know potentially how right they were by expecting those things. How cool is that? Yeah, come on, Christmas. I mean, Jesus, same thing. Anyway, so we see this overflow into their response. And verse 11 says this, they entered the house and they saw the child with his mother. Man, do you think that that's what they would have thought they were going to see when they see a king? Now, remember, this story isn't, they're not still in the stable or the manger. You know, Jesus isn't in the manger anymore. He's potentially two, around about, okay? So this has come along, so they're in a home somewhere, they're in Bethlehem, stars stopped, wise guys show up, and they walk in, to see a two-year-old kid, potentially, and a family that is not rich at all. Pretty interesting stuff. Imagine what's going through their mind. Did we follow the wrong star? Well, the last time I checked, stars didn't move, and that was the only one going anywhere, so we must have. Anyway, it says this. They entered the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. They worshipped him. And then they opened their treasure chests and gave him gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. Can you imagine Joseph and Mary in that time? Craig was talking about how like beyond poor Mary and Joseph were. Like how beyond poor they were. And we can see that in the sacrifice that they bring to the temple, that it's a dove, so they clearly have no money. And then they are given gifts for a king. and their life has changed forever. And we have been looking at how good God is, how good he was to Elizabeth, how good he was to Mary, how good he was to Joseph, how good he was to the shepherds, those despised, like outcast lot. And now we look at these magi, these wizards, and we see them giving gifts to the one true king. How cool is that? The goodness of God, the provision for Mary and Joseph and Jesus. He is a good father. He is. And he proves it in the gifts that he gives. So they bowed down and they worshipped him. The Greek word here for worship means to literally fall to one's knees, to prostrate oneself, and to submit to the one you are in the presence of. It is an act of submission. It is something you do before royalty. But I think that based on all that they're seeing leading up to this point, I think that they're recognizing that there is at least a level of divinity at play in this story now. So it's not just to worship you because you're a king, a child, why are you living in this like scungy house? It's a, man, somehow God's at work here and we don't get it. The story of Christmas, family. It's what we're celebrating and it's why we're here. Earlier on, I mentioned how I love the story of the Magi. And the reason is because in it, we see the most unlikely ones being drawn into God's story. I mean, we are talking wizards here. But the thing is that we see this right throughout the nativity story, from Mary and Joseph to Elizabeth and Zechariah to the shepherds and now the Magi. From the most despised in the eyes of the world, the story of the shepherds that we were talking about last week, to the most wise in the eyes of the world. We see people looking, waiting, searching, and then they come to Jesus and stop. From the most wise to the most despised in society, looking, searching, hoping, is there an answer to this weary world we are in? And they come to this Christ child, this two-year-old, or this baby, literally just born infant, depending on what part of the story we're looking at, and they stop looking. And they give their gifts and they worship because they realize that this moment is divine because he is divine. How beautiful is the story of Christmas. In the Christmas story, we have the extremes of humanity looking for one who could illuminate the darkness, bring rest to a weary world, peace to the anxious, joy to the mourning, to lift up the lowly, and to bring hope and to be hope where there was no hope. And so this morning, I want to ask a very personal question right now. This question is something that I've been forced to ask myself as a result of doing this prep over the last week. What is it that you are truly seeking? What is it that you are truly seeking? Where does your time and energy and resources and dreaming go? It will point you to that thing. Where does your time and energy and resources and dreaming go? It will point you to that thing that you are seeking the most this season. What are you seeking? Who are you seeking? Because the thing is that just as the Magi were seeking this king who was different from the rest, the wise still seek him. The wise still seek him, I believe. And in a world that is weary and angry and hurried and stressed and polarized, incapacitated, self-medicating, numb, hurting, burdened, the search for fulfillment and hope only ever stops in the person of Jesus. It will only ever stop in the person of Jesus. Who are you seeking? What are you seeking? So as followers of Jesus, who or what is it that we are seeking and hoping to find our peace and contentment and joy and delight in this Christmas? Where or who are we placing our hope to find contentment and peace and joy and delight in this Christmas season? Whānau, I put myself right in this mix with you. This is not a better than, need to get better than. This is as humans, we go after so many things that aren't Jesus. And yes, gifts are good, and finding that special gift is good. But am I doing the work that really needs to be done in preparing my heart and preparing him room this Christmas season? Is that the work that I'm doing? Is that the work that I'm focusing on? The carol that we took the line for the series for, A Thrill of Hope, O Holy Night, says, long lay the world in sin and error pining, till he appeared and the soul felt its worth. Whānau, your soul will only ever feel its worth and know its worth in the presence of Jesus. Only ever then. It doesn't matter what else we might think looks attractive or will taste attractive. It is only ever Jesus that we will find true peace and hope and contentment in, so that we can function in a weary and tired world. A thrill of hope. The weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. Praise Jesus for that, Carol. So good. You see, the beauty and promise of the Christmas season is that our pursuit of God is always met by his pursuit of us. That our pursuit of God is always met by his pursuit of us. That is the Christmas story. That is why we are here. And so this morning, I'll ask this question. How is God making himself known to you this season? How is God making himself known to you this season? How is God trying to make himself known to you this season? Are we listening? Are we waiting? Are we seeking? So we see that in the wise men, they go on this journey. They are aware that there is something big happening and that the divine was at work. And when they get there, they bow down and they worship and they present gifts in response to who Jesus is. I've just asked this question, how is God making himself known to you this season? And that's a really tricky question to ask, especially because if you're anything like me, for years you go through this, well, I don't even know how to know how God is making himself known to me this season. Does that make sense? Like, how do I know how he's doing that? And so this morning, I just wanted to unpack just really quickly and really practically some things that I believe that as a whānau, if we were to practice this in the few days we have left leading up to Christmas and on Christmas Day itself, we would experience and know the person of Jesus. Potentially not in a star moving and then stopping in a certain spot and us going in and there's the Christ child kind of way, but we are going to know him as all that he said he is. And he is good, and he wants us to know him. The Christmas story tells us that. And so, whānau, here's a couple of different ways that are just coming up. Some of these might freak you out. Some of them have freaked me out. So, disclaimer there. Silence and solitude. In a world that is full of noise, no wonder it's weary. Yeah? Yeah. The first thing to go in a peaceful situation that very quickly starts to like wear you down is the peace and the calm, yes? And so silence and solitude is actually something that as Christians we need to seek out. We actually need to go after that so that our souls can become centered in who God is and what he is doing and what he is saying. Silence and solitude, it's freaky, but it's important. Slowing down. Who's been at 100 miles an hour this month or even just this last week? Put your hands up if this has been a crazy town week for you. Yeah. So maybe this one's for you. Slow down. Slow down. And that, yeah, again, that's a hard one to pull off, especially when there's a whole lot of things going on. But I genuinely believe that slowing down is enabled when our expectations move into where they need to be. So if my expectation is doing all of these things rather than getting to be with Jesus so that I can become more like Jesus, then slowing down will be hard. If I'm trying to put on like the grandest feast that my family will ever know, and I am being the whole Martha, not the Mary, and sitting at Jesus' feet, slowing down is hard. But it's something that I have personally experienced in my life that when I've been intentional and chosen to maybe not do so much, and maybe, and I'm still not really good at this, make it not look as good as I would want to, then I can come to know the presence of God in that moment. Monotasking. Christmas is the season of multitasking, and society is great at multitasking. To be in 100 places but the one you're in, like physically in that moment. What does it look like to do one job and do it well? Because I'm not saying don't do stuff. I'm just saying that just do one thing. Wash the dishes and know that God is with you. Talk to him, pray to him, ask him to show himself to you in some way. Might seem a bit weird, but he does that kind of thing. He can show himself to you in the dishes or in the act of dishes, not in the dish itself. He can show himself to you in the act of doing the dishes, just like he showed himself in a 2-year-old boy when the Magi walked in and said, "Wait, who are you?" But clearly you're different. Simplicity. Maybe don't do so much. Maybe don't do so much. Maybe don't have 3 meats on your Christmas day. Have one. Now, my family's a big 3-meat family. We always have 3 meats at every family gathering. But cooking 1 meat demands way less and will feed us just as well. You know that kind of thing? And so when we simplify our life, we are enabled to become more present to just how present God is. So let's simplify, do less. It's not about not doing anything, it's just how much are we doing and am I being intentional in what I'm doing? And the last one, unplugging. Family, I dare you this Christmas to not turn your phones on Christmas Day. I dare you. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna probably like freak out and I'll turn it on Boxing Day and have 1,000 whatevers, but who cares? Because I want to be fully present to God and to my whānau. That is important. Unplugging for you might mean not gaming. Might not be turning on the TV and watching that sport game on Christmas Day. Or just not binging Netflix every night leading up to Christmas Day. I say that as one who is guilty. I'm not saying that as in condemnation. I'm just saying it as somebody who's seeking to be more like Jesus, to be transformed by him and his presence. Because what I've picked up on is that if you read your Bible, every person who encounters the presence of God is forever changed. So what does it look like for me to encounter the presence of God and be changed this Christmas? And so, just as the Magi, when they had reached their destination, were filled with joy, they bowed down and they worshipped him and they gave their gifts. What is our response to Jesus this morning and moving towards Christmas? It's where we're landing. So, band, I want to just invite you guys on up. As we move towards Christmas Day, How am I responding to the person of Jesus, to what he is doing, to his presence? Am I becoming more aware of just how present he is? That is the invitation that comes from Christmas. God with us. He is present. Do I know it? Will I live in that truth?